Well, the global recovery begins. We'll see how far it goes and whether or not the US can lead it as lead us as thoroughly well out of the wilderness as they seem to have led us into it. The government here has, of course, announced that there'll probably be this fiscal stimulus package will be out today. And you just heard Michael Brissenden say that that was expected to be somewhere between $5 and $10 billion in a one-off fiscal stimulus to the Australian economy. Now, Stephen Mayne is the founder of crikey.com.au. He's a shareholder activist and a commentator on business. Good morning, Stephen.
Hi, Deborah.
This global recovery, do you think that the rally of the shares is sustainable?
Well, I think in the context of the fact that world markets have fallen by more than 40% in the sharpest and fastest bear market we've seen since the Great Depression, You would expect a bounce at some point. Now, Wall Street's risen by 11% overnight, which in points terms was its biggest ever rise. And I think clearly the world has come to understand that the global economic powers will simply do whatever it takes to get things going. And if that means just printing money, reducing interest rates to zero, and guaranteeing all debts and buying the entire banking system, well, that's what they'll do. And overnight in Europe, we saw a total of $3.2 trillion worth of guarantees and capital injections and stimulus packages into the banking system, particularly the guarantees element. Everyone just said, wow, you know, no more banks are going to fall over, that interest rates are going to keep coming down, the government's going to stand behind everything. This means that the crisis will be fixed come what may. The governments will just do whatever it takes.
Well, it does, though, raise those interesting questions that we've discussed before about moral hazard and whether or not, you know, the wrath of God, if this is what this was, that people got too far ahead of where they should have been, and they've not, the wrath is now been snuffed out. And no one's paid, you know, a lot of these characters haven't actually paid much of a price.
Well, I think at one level you can argue that, but I think if you look at the situation with Royal Bank of Scotland overnight, which was one of the biggest banks in the world, it was the oldest bank in Scotland, or second oldest bank in Scotland, formed in 1724. It's basically been nationalised. The government's basically putting in £20 billion. The CEO, Sir Fred Goodwin, has been sacked. The government's taking positions on the board. Other senior directors are going, and the share takeover is on fairly punitive terms, which pretty much, you know, wipes out the vast amount of the existing equity. So this company has gone from being one of the 10 most valuable companies in the world, worth more than $300 billion, after it took over ABN AMRO, one of the world's big global investment banks, to now being a nationalised, humiliated institution with the CEO sacked, no dividends to be paid out to shareholders, and no cash bonuses in the future. All bonuses will have to be made out of with shares. So I think that a few bankers are learning a pretty severe lesson here, even though they are technically being bailed out by the taxpayer.
And is this a good investment? You know, will taxpayers come out of this actually having equity in institutions that rebuild into something really solid?
Well, I think that the government won't lose so much on the equity. They will get a recovery. But equally, I mean, the likes of the Germans overnight came out and said they're doing a US $525 billion bailout and literally pumping in tens of billions of dollars of equity, guaranteeing loans. And Angela Merkel has announced that no longer will Germany be in a balanced budget position by 2011, that this is going to deplete the German public finances and delay them getting back to a balanced budget situation. So we are seeing a substantial strain on the world's public sector balance sheets. I mean, the Americans already owe $9 trillion US budget level. They've already got a budget surplus of $500 billion US, and they're taking on more than $1 trillion in liabilities, and we'll get more details from them tomorrow on the specifics of sort of their share bailouts of banks that they're going to do. So there is going to be substantial pressure on public sector finances, and there's also going to be literally trillions of dollars of value wiped out from the former private owners of many of these institutions. So a heck of a lot of carnage. But obviously the governments have taken the view that using the government's credit ratings and balance sheet strength is more palatable than literally the chaos and the grinding to a halt of the economy that would come from not stepping in and bailing out a necessity of life, which is a functioning banking system.
And Australia has, of course, stepped in, Mr. Rudd, guaranteed those banks after a very difficult weekend of consideration, I suppose, in Canberra, but how far he should go. The idea of guaranteeing all of the savings deposits in banks was something that was widely applauded. At the same time now, the government is thinking about spending a one-off fiscal stimulus package that could amount to about $10 billion. How do you rate Australia's government response?
Well, I think so far it's been pretty strong. I think particularly the bank guarantee decision was very important over the weekend, that there was increasing discussions. The rest of the world was guaranteeing deposits. There was large amounts of money being pulled out of weaker second-tier institutions and being put into the big banks, particularly the Commonwealth Bank. And if that had continued, it would have led to effectively emergency takeovers of struggling second-tier banks. So I think from a competition policy point of view, guaranteeing the deposits of all depositors in Australia was a good move, because it stopped, you know, Suncorp having to do an emergency sale of its banking operations over the weekend. It was able to announce yesterday, hang on, we might not need to sell our banking operations now, and it will help the likes of Bank of Adelaide and Bendigo Bank. So I think it was a sensible move. The more interesting one, I think, was the guaranteeing of future bond issues by banks, and that goes to the issue of the fact that Australia has $620 billion of foreign debt, and that is just largely borrowed by our banks to on-lend to our households. And with $120 billion to raise in the coming year, and in a credit-constrained world, particularly now with governments all over the world flooding the debt markets, saying, give us money, you know, the Americans are saying, we need to borrow another trillion, pretty challenging for a little country like Australia to go out there and raise $120 billion in the international market. So I think that the way the government stepped up and said, we're guaranteeing all foreign debt, will stop a funding crisis for many of our institutions in terms of credit markets, which are incredibly constrained and dislocated.
If it has stemmed any ideas of panic or people rapidly taking money out of one bank and into another bank, it's basically made people be a bit more measured about their thinking about their finances. Does it also, though, cause a pretty fundamental rethink of things like the role of the rating agencies?
Well, I can't see how the rating agencies will have a role going forward, Moody's and Standard & Poor's, because at the end of the day, there's enormous anger around the world for them. People look at the situation and say, well, Arthur Andersen was the auditor of Enron. They disappeared after Enron collapsed because they basically missed it. And I think that giving AAA ratings to all these opaque, complex US subprime mortgage products will go down, and with the conflicts of interest that the rating agencies had in getting paid vast sums of money by the Wall Street investment banks, which came up with all these dodgy products, I can't see how they can survive independently. So I think that their shareholders will be caused to make a very large contribution to future litigation that will flow. So something will have to replace the existing bodies. I mean, you do need rating agencies, but I think even there you'll probably see more government involvement in who is an authorised credit rating agency in the future, because clearly that system has failed spectacularly in terms of the trillions that have been lost, starting with subprime but then going into an entire contagion in the credit markets.
We've had a caller, Gilly, who asks, what is the chance of the US government's credit rating being affected by all of this? Do you think that the standing of the American economy generally, given the size of its debt now and its commitments in the future, has fundamentally undermined it?
Well, I think this is the greatest blow to American prestige that we've seen in economic or financial terms ever. I mean, they've exported a global contagion here through their basically a complete lack of regulation of everything that Wall Street was producing, particularly in the derivatives market and the credit default swaps market, or the debt insurance market. So at one level, if it was anyone else apart from the US, this country that did this would suffer a plunging currency and would suffer a huge backlash from the world's community. But because the US dollar is the reserve currency, and because the likes of the Chinese, which is the world's biggest creditor nation, and because they have more than $1 trillion in US-denominated bonds and treasury notes, the Chinese literally cannot afford to come along and say, sorry, America, you stuffed up. We're no longer going to use the US dollar as our reserve currency. From now on, the world is going to deal in euros, or the world is going to deal in Swiss francs or the British pound. They can't afford to do that. So the likes of the Chinese and the Japanese have to support the Americans. And ironically, everyone is ploughing into US debt at the moment. US debt is, you know, US treasuries is still regarded as the safest thing in the world. Even though at so many levels you look at the US balance sheet, you'd have to say that they're bankrupt, that you can't have $9 trillion of debt and take on another trillion just like that. But because they're so dominant in the currency is the reserve currency and they're too big to fail, literally, America is too big to fail, the world has to support it. But the next US president, I think, will have to take some dramatic decisions, firstly to bring the budget into balance, and the US as a nation will have to get off its debt addiction, just like the UK and Australia, two other nations which have just got too much debts and have been partying beyond our means for far too long.
My guest this morning is Stephen Mayne. He's a shareholder activist and the founder of crikey.com.au. Stephen, one of the great mysteries is the, or perhaps not such a mystery, I'm sure you'll be able to reveal it, is the fate of the Aussie dollar. I mean, even though interest rates are high here, and you would think money would be flooding into our banks compared to other countries where interest rates are so low, the Aussie dollar has really copped it in the neck. Now, Fran, among other listeners, wants to know what's going on with the Aussie and why is the US dollar so strong?
Well, I think the fact that the US dollar is the reserve currency has been, people have had a flight to US dollars. And the other thing that people forget, I mean, people at one level, and I've just said it before, that the Americans have got too much debt and they are broke, etc., etc. But at a private level, the Americans are still extremely wealthy. US individuals, institutions, university endowments in total have US $5 trillion invested in offshore equity markets. So what we've seen in the last few days has been a sort of a global liquidation of equity positions. Everyone's been pulling their money home. Everyone's being told to pay their debts back. Everyone's getting margin called. Big fund managers are having redemptions. They're having to raise cash. So a lot of that US money invested in foreign markets, including the Australian market, has been repatriated home. And the same thing has happened with the yen. There's been an enormous amount of money that has been borrowed in Japan at cheap rates and invested in Australia at higher rates. And that's called the carry trade. And a lot of those Japanese investors have been taking their money home from Australia. So that explains why, in part, the Japanese yen and the US dollar have been the two strongest currencies over the last few days, that literally people have been, it's been, you know, each looking after their own, bring your money home in time of crisis, and that's meant a very large capital outflows from Australia. Plus, we've been hit by sort of the bursting of the resources bubble and people having great fears that Australia won't be able to retain its income levels. And Australia runs a massive $60 billion a year current account deficit. You know, we have to borrow from the world a lot. We're a highly leveraged economy with $1 trillion of household debt. Australia represents too big a risk. Sell off the dollar and put it somewhere safer, go into gold or go into US treasuries.
Later on this morning, I'm going to be talking to Professor Lee Gung Song, who is the director of the China Economy and Business Program at the Crawford School. He's looked at the question of mineral prices and the bursting of the resources bubble. Do you think that that is really the fate of the future, that the resources bubble is now collapsed and will not reinflate?
No, I think that the world will have to collectively tighten its belt. There probably will be definitely a global contraction, possibly a global recession, and certainly the debt-funded consumer nations like the US household, the UK, Australia, will have to tighten its belts. So I think certainly the Chinese export sector, you know, the great sort of you know, export to Walmart so Americans can consume cheap Chinese goods, that will slow down and that will affect mineral prices. But the counterpoint to that is that there's an enormous amount of internal economic activity in Japan. There's a massive industrialization infrastructure program. There's a huge urbanization program, and there's still going to be hundreds of new apartment towers going up in the coastal cities of China. And for that, they still will need Australian steel and all of the base metals that go into it. So I think that, sure, the bubble has burst, and we probably will see prices never get back to the levels, that the crazy levels that they got to at the peak of the boom, but there is still some fundamental demand coming out of China. They do have $2 trillion of reserves, and I think they will pump prime their economy. I mean, our little $5 billion stimulus that might get announced today will be literally a drop in the bucket compared to the capacity that China has to internally fund a massive fiscal stimulus if they feel they need to counterbalance a big drop-off in their export earnings, which a lot of people are expecting in a credit-constrained world.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
Thanks, Deborah.
Stephen Mayne there, who's a shareholder, activist and founder of crikey.com.au. Time now for the news headlines with John Logan.